Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Let's go with the lineups. You got Olin Krutz, the Hawaiian heartthrob.
Olin Krutz.
Olin was the best center in the league. He made me a better player and competitor. We all looked up to you, Olin.
14-year NFL veteran.
Olin Krutz was a warrior. He embodies what a football player is.
Six-time Pro Bowler and four-time NFL All-Pro.
Touchdown! Who was that lead blocker?
Olin Krutz with a block.
The old veteran comes out there, cuts the defender off of his feet.
Football analyst for 670 The Score and NBC Sports Chicago.
I'll be completely honest with you. I feel like 100%. I got no excuse for you. I just played like today.
Thanks a bunch, man. We greatly appreciate you joining us. And thanks for your honesty.
No problem.
Olin Krutz.
The conversation is about the toughest guy in the room. Olin Krutz is being talked about.
Olin Krutz with Danny Parkins on 670 The Score.
Olin joins us every Bears Friday at 3 on the Danny Parkins Show by way of the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park. What's up, O?
Danny, what's going on, man?
Oh, you know, nothing's going on around here. It's been quiet. It's been lame. No news. It's boring.
Yeah, I see that this week. I see that.
Yeah, but there's been a lot of stuff coming out of Hallis Hall, and a lot of it centers around the offensive line. I'm curious. They've made a concerted effort, they say, to put Mitch under center more, and they say that's not just a one-week thing for the Lions and that it's going to help everything, the passing game, the running game, play action, and the offensive line. Can you explain to the layperson why it makes such a big difference for him to be under center about half the time?
Yeah, you know, if you look back to when they drafted him, Dow Loggins and Dave Ragone, who's still – I think he's the pass game coordinator, one of the 990 quarterback coaches they got up there. But when they brought him in, Danny, they wanted – Dow Loggins wanted to run this version of this outside zone offense that you'll see in San Francisco or Tennessee. And they ran it really well against the Lions last week, the outside zone I'm talking about. And the two tackles, Charles Leno and Bobby Massey, did a really nice job in cutting off the backside of the defense, reaching a three technique, and it just allows Mitch, the defense to play run first, to hide the ball a little bit, maybe get him out of the pocket a little bit, which they really didn't do a lot of in this game, to be honest. And to be really honest, I'm waiting to see the points off of all this, what they're talking about being under center, because if you look at it, when they're running the ball well against the Lions, and look, to be brutally honest, the Lions were just giving the Bears the run. They were lining up in three tight ends and with eight blockers, and the Lions were sometimes lined up with only six guys in a box. So just like last year when they played against Denver and San Diego, when they had over 150 yards rushing, we just haven't seen the points yet from this kind of offense when they're running the ball. And that's really where they're struggling, is scoring points. And then late in the game, what Mitch Trubisky is really known for is go to no huddle and throw a couple touchdown passes late, and they pull it out late. But they did look better. The Lions kind of gave them the run, but just waiting to see them score more points when they're running the ball well.
Is that a good job then by Matt Nagy? Like, hey, they're giving me the run, so I'm going to take the run and have 5.3 yards per carry.
You know, it was a great job to take the run, but what my argument would be to that is that they didn't score points when they were running well.
Sure.
Because they didn't score points until late in the game. Really, they had the the one drive that went down to, I think it was the end of the third quarter, fourth quarter, and then the Lions, you know, went for that long field goal, and they got good field position, and they attacked, I think his name was Tony McCray, who was about the seventh DB on the roster. So you just kind of want to see this early in games, because I don't know all the stats, but I think the Bears were like last year in first half scoring, and it just looked like a lot of the same until we got down into really late in the game. And, you know, the Lions would probably argue that they're missing five or six starters. So they did run the ball well. They ran the ball well last year in a couple of games, like I said, namely Denver and San Diego. Again, in those two games, I think they only had 16 or 17 points in both games. So just waiting to see them put drives together that end in the end zone while they're running the ball well, let it all tie together, because the Lions showed pretty early that no matter who you put on the field, they were going to stay in nickel. They were going to stay in nickel, and they weren't going to match their big guys with your big guys. I think they did it on one drive, and then Jamie Collins got thrown out of the game for headbutting the referee. So they lost a linebacker there, and they didn't do it the rest of the game. So you just wanted to see a little more sustained success while they were giving you those looks that were favorable to running the ball.
You know, because it was weird. Everybody was impressed, myself included, with Mitch mm-hmm. Trubisky's end of the game, right? His last mm-hmm. 13 minutes. And I just didn't know, what do you credit it to? Is it all the cornerbacks right. being out and Matt Patricia? Is it that they were running earlier? Like, how does a switch flip like that?
I have no idea. And I think that's why, you know, we were sitting there. You watch 55 minutes of a game and you're ready to do, and you do radio. We were ready to do one post game. And within 5 minutes, Mr. Trubisky threw a bunch of great passes and the game totally changed. And of course, Stafford takes a sack on a sprint, right, which I can't even explain. And then he throws the ball in the middle of the field and Jaylon Johnson punches it out and Fuller intercepts it. And now we're right back in business I think they ended up on the 37-yard line going in again to win the game, and you end up shocked because you're so disappointed for most of the game, and then they make the plays, and you have to give them credit. All you can do is play against who's on the field and you know, make those plays. You just want to see them do it a little earlier in the game, because we all know that performance we watched against the Lions, you're not going to beat the really good teams in NFL with that, but it's hard because you don't want to take credit from them, but like Matt Nagy says, you're not going to put deodorant on the rest of the game. You have to take a look at it. You have to improve those areas. And I think the biggest question the Bears offense comes out of that game with is, and the question they've had for almost 22 games now is, how do we score points? Even when we're running the ball well, how do we put the ball in the end zone? Because a lot of that running they did, it didn't equal points, Danny, even though they were running the ball. And that was the same thing that happened to them last year. When they ran the ball well, they couldn't put the ball in the end zone. So they really didn't put the ball in the end zone against the Lions until they went to kind of a no-huddle offense. And they had to throw the ball. And the Lions, you know, you got to ask Matt Patricia why he's in man coverage, although he likes to argue that he has one of the greatest plays in a fourth quarter, so that's not his fault. But that's their problem, not ours. But that's all I'm waiting for, is to see that kind of running the ball, Mitch Trubisky under center in the first, second, and third quarter, that equal points.
Yeah, we all want to see him score points, right? To me, I said this before the year. I maybe said it when you were on. I honestly don't remember. I said it a few times. Like, the Bears were 29th in scoring last year, offensive scoring. They mm-hmm. were, I believe, fourth in defensive points allowed. If you could be top half, so top 16 in both, points scored and points allowed, there were 10 teams that did it last year. 9 of them made the playoffs, including both AFC Championship game representatives, both NFC Championship game representatives, and then the 10th team that didn't make the playoffs were the 8-8 Dallas Cowboys. So for the Bears to go from 29th in offensive scoring to 16th, they got to score 5 more points a game. They got to go from like 17.5 points a game to 22.5 points per game. That doesn't seem to be unreasonable, O. Like, it feels like this Bears team somehow, some way, should be able to eke out 22, 23 points per game.
Yeah, and I'll keep saying this, and it even happened in this game. This offense is going to be dependent upon, and look, I'm an expert at being playing for offenses that are dependent upon the defense's turnovers and special team, really good special teams. Okay, so even 7 points this week, right? 7 of the 27 points they scored, it was from an interception. That's how we got in the end zone. And once was the Lions going for a 55-yard field goal, and they missed, and that gave us really good field position. So this offense is going to need breaks like that. They're going to be dependent upon the defense to cause some havoc, to get some turnovers. And if you ask me, that's the place they're going to find those 5 or 6 extra points that you're talking about. Obviously, we haven't seen this offense operate with Foles at quarterback. Maybe he could be responsible for 5 or 6 more points. But for the offense we saw this past week against a Lions defense that you wouldn't say is going to be great at any point this season, they're going to need a little help from their defense, from that front seven, to cause a little more havoc, to create a little more turnovers. We need Cordarrelle Patterson to be explosive there on returns, maybe Tariq Cohen on punt returns, but they're going to need a little help to get those extra points that you're talking about.
Do you think that this Bears offense would be better with Nick Foles?
It's hard to say when you haven't seen them. My first question, my first answer, my gut feeling is yes, just because that's the kind of offense that a lot of these guys there, by a lot of these guys, I mean Coach Nagy, DeFilippo, Lazor. I was calling him Lazar last week. I don't know why that was from Europe, and Hub had to correct me, but Lazor. So a lot of these
Lazor's cooler, too.
Lazor's cooler, yeah.
It's way cooler, so just call him the cool name.
I don't know where I came with Lazar. Just made things up. But anyway, a lot of these guys, I think, would be actually more comfortable running their scheme with a quarterback who actually is good at running the scheme they want to run, right? And right now it seems like, you know, all of a sudden, okay, well, we're just going to go under center, we're going to run outside zone, and we're going to run the Shanahan scheme, which none of these guys are really experts at, except for Juan Castillo, who coached with Kubiak down in Baltimore, I think it was, years ago. So I think they'll be better at Foles at offense in this offense. That's not a knock on Mitch Trubisky. It's just the style of offense that the Bears want to run.
I agree with you. And apparently that makes me a Mitch hater,
right?
I guess.
Well, you should see my Twitter DMs. It's something else.
Yeah, because here's what I say, Olin, about it, is that for the Bears organization, the best case scenario is that Mitch becomes great. Definitely. They drafted him. They invested in him. He's younger. He's more athletic. He's a restricted free agent. They can match any offer he gets. It would be better. But they've built the team. They hired the coach. They put in the system, the whole thing. And then they bring in this quarterback who could run that system. I personally would like to see it, because we're not asking for – they don't have to be the Chiefs. They don't have to be the Eagles. They don't have to be the Ravens. They just – if Nick Foles can just make them average, I think this is a really damn good team. So I still think we're going to see it sooner rather than later. What about you?
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you. Obviously, you hope Mitch proves us both wrong. I hope Mitch comes out there and just shows something that we haven't seen yet. You know, a guy – processing information in the pocket, a guy running this offense, this scheme that you know a lot more about than a lot of people, Danny, from seeing it in Kansas City. It's just, you know, the quarterbacks that Coach Nagy has been with, and I could miss one here, but I think it's been Donovan McNabb, Michael Vick, Alex Smith, and Patrick Mahomes. And these are guys who can sit in the pocket, they can process information, and they can get the ball out to all the weapons. And it just doesn't seem like right now Mitch has been doing that. Now, a lot of that you can argue is he doesn't have help and he doesn't have guys to help him and he doesn't have a lot of support on the field. But, you know, we just watched a game now that they're running the ball well in the first half. They got everything working from the O-line's blocking pretty good, and we just can't seem to put the ball in the end zone. And I'm not saying that's all Mitch's fault. I'm just saying that it doesn't seem like this system or what they're trying to do really fits him.
I agree. We're talking to Olin Krutz. He's, of course, a part of the Bears. What is your assignment this week? Oh, are you doing Bears post-post again? What's your assignment? I apologize for not knowing ahead of time.
No, don't worry about it. I think post-post is not up this week because of the Cubs game, so I'll be on pregame in the morning with Hub and the great Pat Manley.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, I apologize. I should have known that before you were coming on. When I watched the Monday night game, the Giants' offensive line, I thought was going to get Daniel Jones killed, but Daniel Jones impressed me. I'm sure you've watched the film, or if not watching the game live. What's your takeaway on the Giants?
Yeah, Daniel Jones looks like he's, you know, he's got a chance to be a pretty damn good player. He stands in that pocket. He gets the ball out. He finds, you know, he has some pretty good receiver, Darius Slayton and Sterling Shepard. And a tight end, even a tight end, Evan Engram, looks like a mismatch problem. But look, hopefully our D-line can do. The Steelers' D-line is, you know, they're in the top four or five D-lines in the NFL, just like the Chicago Bears' D-line is, except the Steelers' D-line wreaked havoc in week one, you know, with Watt and Tuitt and, you know, Hayward and Bud Dupree and Ben Alualu. But so sometimes it's, you know, matchup makes fights, and that was a really tough matchup for the Giants' offensive line, especially the right side, Fleming and Zeitler, and especially their center, Gates, really struggled against these guys. But that's the kind of D-line that we have. Hopefully our defense line plays a little better, actually a lot better than they did against the Lions. But the Lions' defense, the Lions' offensive line, especially rookie Jonah Jackson from Ohio State, really impressed me against Akeem Hicks. I was going to see a lot more from Akeem Hicks and Khalil Mack, especially with Vitae being out and their backup right tackle Crosby being in. But those guys provided pretty good protection against our front. So hoping that our front can harass Daniel Jones the way that the Steelers' front harassed him and force him into a few. I think he had two interceptions this past week. So hoping that they force him into a few mistakes, and hopefully that vaunted defensive front, maybe Quinn will be suited up this week. The one we've been waiting to see all year kind of didn't play like we thought they could against the Lions. Hopefully they play a little better this week coming up.
Yeah, when I was thinking about the game today, and Robert Quinn was a full participant in practice, so he's officially listed as questionable for the game, but he practiced today. I assume he will play. Don't know if you feel the same way. Khalil Mack, since he's been a Bear, has never had a legitimate pass rusher opposite him because he had Leonard Floyd. And then sometimes he also didn't have Akeem Hicks. So this game will be, if Quinn plays, it'll be his first time as a Bear having a real pass rush option opposite him and Akeem Hicks. I would expect this to be a dominant performance from the front seven.
Yeah, you would expect that going into this week, you know, with that, especially with the performance the Giants offensive line just put on. I mean, you'd expect, though, that you know, Garrett, their offensive coordinator, is going to try to help them out a little bit, maybe screens and run the ball more, although they didn't run the ball at all well against the Steelers. But I don't really know what they do to slow down this Bears front. It'll be interesting to watch what their answers are. I would think screens and move the pocket and try to get the ball out of his hand as quickly as possible, kind of like what most people do when they face Khalil Mack and Akeem Hicks and the Chicago Bears. So we'll see. I mean, I'm excited as you. Like you said, been excited since they signed Quinn. I know Eddie Goldman opted out, thought that front seven was going to be really, really dominant. The Lions had a lot of success running the ball, even blocked pretty well against the Chicago Bears. But the Lions' offensive line, I would say, and their tight ends as a combination versus the Giants, the Lions are a lot better than they are. So we should have a little more of an advantage against the New York Giants this week than we had against the Detroit Lions.
Oh, when you watch the Bears running game, like, do you have a set number of carries? Like, they have to get to X in order for you to be satisfied with it?
No, I really don't. I know a lot of people think because I played offensive line that I'm dying for them to run the ball. I just want to see them put the ball in the end zone and do what their guys do best. And I think that right now, really, you know, especially last week, I mean, I know they ran the ball well. I know everybody was excited about Mitch being under center more. I would argue that when you took a really good look at the film and the looks the Lions were giving them, I would argue that their package out of three tight ends wasn't big enough, and that they should have stayed in that package and forced the Lions to put their big guys on the field and then thrown out of that package, because the Lions weren't stopping the run. I think they came out of it too soon. I think a lot of times they got down into the red zone and went to three wide receivers too quick and gave the Lions their advantage back. So I thought that they could have controlled that game with their run game and put the ball in the end zone out of bigger packages. And by bigger, I mean more tight ends on the field than wide receivers.
What did you think of Patterson as a runner?
Cordarrelle Patterson is the same guy we watched in 2019, right? He's explosive. He's dangerous. If you get him on the edge, he's a big strike. He's a really big, strong. I don't think he's a wide receiver, but he's a running back. I like him as a runner. I don't think that you want to feature him. I think that you should feature Montgomery. I think you should give him the ball more. But I do like him as a changeup. I do think he causes matchup problems when he's back there and out there. And I do think if you can get him to the edge, he can be explosive.
Oh, enjoy pregame, enjoy the actual game, and we're looking forward to having you as a part of the show going forward. Thanks, man.
Appreciate it, guys.
All right, that's Olin Kreutz with us on The Score. Good news and bad news. The bad news is that Dane Dunning is not going to be able to come on the show today. That's unfortunate. We will have him next week. The good news is the Bears have responded to the mayor of Chicago calling them out on Mully and Haw. So we will hear the mayor call out the Bears, and then we will give you the Bears' response. Now-
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Next on The Score.
We're very optimistic. We're talking to the city. We presented a plan. We think it's a good plan, and we're told that it is a good plan, but the city wants to see the numbers of active cases in the city come down before we can bring people to Soldier Field. So we're hopeful, but we want to be prudent. We want to do the right thing, and we want to cooperate with the city in their health and safety measures.
That was George McCaskey last week talking about where they were at with the Bears and the city and the pandemic and getting fans into the stands. The vast majority of the NFL still doesn't have that option, and the Bears included. But today, Mayor Lori Lightfoot was on Mully and Haw, and she's got takes. I mean, we really should see if she wants to host a Bears postgame show sometime. It would be awesome. Bring her in studio with Hub and O, whatever. Like, just let her rip. Because she, love her or hate her as the mayor, I love her as a talk show caller or talk show guest or Bears meatball fan. It's great.
Wondering if Ryan Pace is awake up there.
Yeah, just throws haymakers from the mayor's office. But she didn't sugarcoat how she felt about the idea of how the Bears were posturing about wanting fans and how they've handled this so far.
There's got to be real dialogue, meaning they've got to sit down with us, with our public health folks. They've got to demonstrate to us that they actually have a real plan in place, a plan that's going to keep everybody safe, including the workers at Soldier Field, right? The game doesn't just happen. There's literally tons of people, the back office and the infrastructure folks at Soldier Field, from the Park District to the Bears operation, that also have to be safe and protected. And that's way before you have any conversation about letting the average fan in. You know, I watched the opening night of the NFL, and I was quite surprised to see fans in the stand at Kansas City. Very interested to know what they did, how they made the selections, and also what was the screening process that they used to get fans in the stand. It's a complicated thing, and I can't just react to someone saying, oh, yeah, we want to get fans in the stand. It's not going to be that easy, and it's not going to happen unless we have real dialogue and we have a real conversation about the nuts and bolts, the granularity that's going to be needed to even talk about a plan for having fans in the stand. That hasn't happened yet. We're certainly open to it, but, you know, I don't like hearing for the first time on sports media, oh, yeah, we're going to have fans in the stand. Yeah, that's not going to happen. Talk to the Cubs.
She's just fiery. Like, she's got takes. And because that was in response to, and frankly, I was in the middle of this a little bit because I was told that the White Sox were making plans for the logistics of having fans in the stands. And the White Sox, to their beat writers, denied that report and said, we need approval from the city, which I never disputed. I said, but they were preparing the logistics of what that would look like. And everyone's like, Parkin, see, you were wrong. And then the next morning, Crane Kenny came on and was like, yeah, we're making plans for getting approved. I was like, ha, see, they're doing it. Like, every team was making those logistical plans in case it got cleared. But when Crane said that on the Score, it pissed the mayor off because she was like, why are you doing this through the media? But in their defense, they're just answering a question they're asked. Everyone knows they have to get approval from local government. They were just making plans. And so in response to what Mayor Lightfoot said with Mully and Haw, this is what the Bears have released in the last 20 minutes or so, a statement to the media. We have had weekly communication with the mayor's office on a variety of topics relating to the pandemic, including fans at Soldier Field. In mid-August, we reviewed a detailed plan with city and public health officials to assess the feasibility of allowing a limited number of fans to attend Bears games. The plan was the result of weeks of collaboration among the Bears, ASM Global, the Chicago Park District, and health experts. It addresses city, state, and NFL guidelines to ensure a safe environment for everyone inside the stadium. After the review, all parties agreed the timing to welcome fans was not right given the current health metrics. On August 17th, both the Bears and City issued statements referencing the plan, the collaboration, and the hope to return fans to Soldier Field, but not until health metrics improved. We continue to work closely with members of the mayor's staff on monitoring the environment, assessing the plan, and determining the right time to bring fans back. So they're basically saying, what are you talking about? Communication and a plan. We've been communicating weekly and we presented you a plan. So that is, I don't really know who to believe. I will say the Bears, I got to be honest with you, the Bears have some pretty specifics in their rebuttal there. Like they're saying dates. They're claiming weekly meetings. They said there was a presentation on August 17th. They all agreed about it. Got to be honest. Like the devil's in the details. Costanza, it's not a lie if you believe it. I kind of believe the Bears' statement. So maybe they're not communicating enough. And my guess is the mayor's just mad that she has to keep responding to media reports. But what she doesn't understand in that circumstance is these guys are public figures. They're in front of microphones all the time. Like, if you get George McCaskey, I think I saw he was on WGN today. Like, if you get George McCaskey on and you don't ask him about plans for fans in the stands, you're not doing your job. And so then he's going to comment. And then that comment is going to reach the mayor, and then people are going to ask the mayor about the chances of getting fans in the stands. And it's just cyclical. That's just how media works. So, I know that she's under a lot of pressure and the city and the pandemic and everything. Because, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't know if you guys know, I mean, really, any small business owner. But I know some. I know someone who owns a gym in the city. A couple of people who own restaurants. They're all just hurting so much. And so they want to earn. Like our job, we're very lucky. We can do it remotely, and a lot changes But things change in ways that are, like, out of our control. Like, less of you guys are commuting, so there are less people in their cars, and so it's a different thing, but it allows us to try some new things. Like, we've launched our Twitch channel and all sorts of stuff like that. But a restaurant that's, like, standalone business, they need people out coming to the restaurants, and it's about to get cold, and so then you can't sit outside, so they need people inside. So they need the, you know, the capacity to raise, or they're about to go under, but it's got to be safe, and we haven't done a great job as a country of actually getting it all down. So it's just, it's very complicated, and there's a lot of conflicting interests, and I would imagine the mayor's hearing it from a lot of people. She's hearing it from restaurants, she's hearing it from gyms, she's hearing it from small business owners, she's hearing it from sports teams. Like, so she's just, I have empathy with both sides there, frankly. The Bears clearly are communicating with them. They wouldn't be lying about the meetings that they've held and the plans that they had made and the plans that they had communicated to them. There'd be no reason to lie. That thing could be fact-checked and refuted in 2 seconds. So I believe the Bears. But the mayor's frustration is everyone wants to go to the finish line of being back to normal without doing the work that it takes to go back to normal in terms of society. So no one's really wrong with that. In that standpoint, it's the type of thing where they just want something that they're not able to have, frankly. That's what it is. Everybody wants fans. The games are better, but we're just not there yet. Speaking of the Bears, what's the best way to put this? The Allen Robinson story took a pretty interesting turn today. I don't know if you guys all read Dan Graziano's piece over at ESPN.com. He clearly talked to Allen Robinson's agent because, you know, he wasn't sourced in it, but you could tell. And I am a firm believer that Ryan Pace should have gotten the Allen Robinson deal done before the season started. But I now understand where the Bears are coming from, that what their issue is with the negotiation with Allen Robinson. And I know Bears fans don't want to hear it, but here's the problem. The problem is they don't have much cap space next year, and the cap's going down. If you go to SpotTrack for the Bears' 2021 salary cap, it has them with about $9 million in cap space with a cap of about $187 million. That $187, if you read the Dan Graziano piece, might be high by about $10 million. And the Bears are estimated to have a little over $9 million with the 187 number. So the Bears are not in very good cap position next year. So they are saying the franchise tag with a lower cap would be about $16 million, $15.7 million. So they want to do an average annual value at 15.7, at $16 million to make the math easy. So they want to do, say, 4-year deal at $16 million per. They want to do 4 for $64 million. Allen Robinson's saying, my peers have signed deals at about $18 million per. Odell Beckham, Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams. He wants more than Cooper Kupp got in that $16 million range. Reportedly is willing to take less than Keenan Allen got, which is $20 million per, and I still think that he's worth Keenan Allen's deal. But the Bears are saying, we could just franchise tag you next year for 15.7, so why are we gifting you the extra $2-3 million when we don't have much cap space anyway? The Bears aren't wrong. They're just going to really infuriate their best offensive player over a couple of million dollars. And you can make the determination of whether or not that's wrong. But in terms of Ryan Pace's cap guy, and I didn't expect to be saying this, by the way. I was crushing him for this. That is how anybody would do it. We can lock you in at 15.7. So if you want us to sign you long term, we'll sign you long term at 15.7. Now, hope my guess is this ends up with Allen Robinson taking a deal at like $17 million a year. Because he won't want to. He'll be a little angry that it's not 18, 19, 20. The Bears will be a little angry that it's not 15.7 or 16. Allen Robinson's not going to want to play 15 more weeks and risk injury and be a distraction to the team, be a bad teammate, all the stuff that comes with that. Even though, go get your money, he clearly has the support. My guess is we see an Allen Robinson contract that comes in below Odell Beckham, below Tyreek Hill, above Cooper Kupp, below Keenan Allen. That's my guess. And he will be a victim, if he takes that deal, of the coronavirus, of the pandemic. Just like we were talking about in baseball, how every team other than the Dodgers, because of their crazy TV deal, is going to have to pay way less money to guys, and that's going to push Javi Baez down for the Cubs. That's going to push Chris Bryant down for the Cubs or anybody else who might sign him. I think that's the situation Allen Robinson might find himself in, which goes further, by the way, to explaining what he did earlier in the week with his teammates coming out in support and going the social media route. It was like, hey, I'm desperate here. They got a rock and a hard place. And you can make every argument in the world. Hey, they gave Jimmy Graham $9 million. They gave Mike Glennon the 19. Why are they being this way with their best offensive player? Cap situation's different. So if they think the cap is really going to be that low, and that's what the franchise tag number is going to be, that's what they should negotiate off of. And my guess is, if I looked into it, those other teams aren't in the cap situation the Bears are next year. That would be my guess. Like, if I looked at the Chargers cap space, my guess is they've got more than the Bears to be able to pay Keenan Allen that money. And the Hopkins deal was way into the future, so the Cardinals definitely had more cap space. And they got a rookie quarterback. So, rookie contract quarterback. So, to me, that's what's happening here. My guess is they're going to get it done. My guess is Allen Robinson's going to be a little disappointed. But if the Bears think the cap's going to be that low, that's how we got here. Saquon Barkley's supposed to be the best offensive player on the field, but he was awful, as any fantasy owner of his would know, in week one. He also found himself in a little bit of a controversy. We'll catch you up on a huge storyline of Bears-Giants next on The Score.
I'm sure one of the intents was to shut Saquon Barkley. You guys did that. How did you do it?
You know, we had a commitment, and we weren't going to be bashful about that commitment. We thought that guy was a catalyst for whatever that they were going to do offensively. We put our secondary in harm's way some in an effort to do so. But it's a team game. They embraced that challenge. We needed to stack the line of scrimmage. We need to bring people like Mike Hilton and so forth, and we did. We did what we thought was necessary to minimize his impact on the game.
Mike Tomlin on Saquon Barkley for Danny Parkin Show. Thanks for hanging out on The Score as we send you into your weekend. Len Casper's going to join us at 5 o'clock. We're going to play pick a player in a little less than 1 hour from now. You're going to hear from Rick Hahn, hopefully coming up in about 10 minutes. You should check us out on Twitch, by the way. Get involved. It's twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. I am new to Twitch. The people on Twitch are very, very adamant that I need to have either a headset with a microphone or a mic stand, but I like to hold a microphone. They apparently want me to be able to type more during the show, and they don't like my really skinny forearms, but I
Evergreen
like,
comment.
Yeah, but it's just, is this going to be a daily complaint of the Twitch chat chain?
Because it's absolutely, yes, it'll be daily, even though I've told you people on the Twitch chat yesterday
people, Twitch people.
What Danny prefers. We provide everybody. Like, Bernstein's got an arm because he prefers the mic arm. Lawrence used to have a stand, but then he wanted to hold it. So we go ahead and let Lawrence hold it. You prefer to hold it. And they're saying that we're giving you guys these crap karaoke microphones. These are Shure SM58s. Every single live concert you've gone to pre-COVID, these giant rock stars are using the same microphones that you're using, that we give you guys, the SM58, the Shure SM58. It's a great microphone, and you can continue holding it the way you want.
Nope.
And if Gertz can put Tanny and myself up on the – there we go.
Nope.
I said yesterday that I might be able to give out a pen. Buddy, did I upgrade the prize?
Really?
I went down to the fourth floor in our promo closet. I rated it. We've got this nice gray 670 The Score hoodie.
$1.
What?
We've got this to give out. It's only an XL, so you got to be slightly fat. That's the smallest one we have, or you can like swim in your sweatshirt a little bit. But nice radio.com 670 The Score gray hoodie will be your prize for pick a player today.
I don't even have one of those.
Do you want one?
Yeah.
Ah, damn. Sorry. This is the last one.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, I do want a prize for pick a player more. But that is a legitimate prize. I am shocked.
It's
These
good.
Are pandemic times and AM radio.
I'm going to mail it out myself.
What?
Yeah.
This is great. I'm very excited about this development coming up. But yeah, we need a disclaimer or something in the Twitch stream so I don't have to answer these comments. And I kind of, like someone said yesterday, I kind of look like B Rabbit from 8 Mile with how I'm holding my microphone.
Yeah.
And I like that. Yeah. You know I do, Tanny.
I know you do. I've been trying to get you the Britney Spears microphone headset since COVID started because you're a bit of a mic wanderer. So, you know, it's been a problem back here that I've only been stewing about for 6 months. So don't worry, Twitch viewers, you're not the only ones.
Okay, so I'm a mic wanderer, and you've had that resentment that going on that long. Okay, that's good. That's healthy. Get ready for this storyline going into the game. Is Saquon Barkley an every down back, which I think is one of the craziest things I've ever heard, because I was the guy when Saquon Barkley was in his last year at Penn State that I said he was the best running back in football. He was better than every running back in the NFL when he was at Penn State. But listen to what Tiki Barber stepped into with Giants fans.
I learned this early on in my career because I was a third down back before I was a star running back. You know what I mean? So if you can't block, you can't be on the field on third down. You just can't, because you know those are high blitz and dog downs, and someone's coming from the safety, so you have to recognize what a defense is trying to do or how they're going to dog or blitz you. And more so, recognition is one, and then two, you got to go hit a dude. Saquon Barkley's a big man. He doesn't want to hit anybody. That is it's frustrating to watch.
He also dances.
He's a great back, but he's frustrating to watch trying to pass protect.
Yeah, he also dances a lot. I know there's more than a ton of holes last night, and there haven't been so far, you know, his days in the NFL. He's an incredibly electric player. Everybody knows that, but he does a lot of dancing, a lot of negative yards.
Yeah, he's a big back who wants to play small.
That is just damning on Saquon Barkley, who is probably the best athlete at running back in the NFL. Obviously, McCaffrey is the most productive. Alvin Kamara is the best pass-catching guy. Zeke is incredibly powerful behind a great offensive line. But Saquon Barkley is one of the best athlete running backs I've ever seen. So the idea that he can't do everything on a football field is ludicrous. Let's hear Saquon Barkley's response to Tiki Barber, because this is going to be all over the broadcast on Sunday.
I don't know if you heard it or not, but Tiki Barber said the other day that he's not sure if you can be an every down back because you can't pass protect, and he called you a big back who wants to play small. Want to know what your response is to all of that?
Obviously, Tiki's a legend. Did a lot of great things for this franchise. So, you know, I'm not going to look at it as disrespect. I'm going to look at it as a challenge. But same thing with him. Like everyone else, they don't care about outside opinions. I'm really only focused about the pins in this building and try to come work every single day and get better. To be completely honest, the reason why it doesn't bother me is no disrespect to anyone on this call or anyone outside this. When I say I don't care, I truly don't care about other people's opinions. I know you can ask my teammates, you can ask anyone in this building, they won't question my toughness. So everyone want to go out. It's easy to be an all-pro clicker and to be able to watch stuff on film and say, oh, you should have did this, you should have done that, or you couldn't improve on that. That's the easy way. But in my position, I know how I come to work every single day, and I know the belief that my teammates have in me. So that's why every single week I'm going to come out and just try to improve and get better, not for you guys and not for anyone outside of here, but for the guys in this building.
That is Saquon Barkley responding to Tiki Barber from the Tiki and Tierney Show on CBS Sports Radio.
It's easy to be an all-pro clicker.
An all-pro clicker. What does that mean? Like a hot take artist? What is a clicker? That is a weird thing to do. But is it Keyboard Warrior? He's saying that Tiki Barber maybe typed that take out somewhere onto Twitter or something. I don't know.
It's easy to be an all-pro clicker.
An all-pro clicker. Easier than being an all-pro kicker. Bears could use one of those. I do not think that the proverbial chip on the shoulder is going to be something from Saquon Barkley. He'll be better against the Bears than he was against the Steelers because it's impossible not to. But I don't think the problem is Saquon Barkley. I think the problem is that Giants offensive line. So I do not expect him to have a monster game against the Bears, even though he's pissed and trying to prove Tiki Barber wrong. And by the way, I hadn't checked the scores in a while. My guy JT, Justin Thomas, has given it all back. 5 under 65 yesterday, 5 over through 11 today. So Patrick Reed at 4 under par is your solo leader. At winged foot, Bryson DeChambeau with a 2 under 68 today, following his 69 from yesterday, is alone in second place at 3 under par. And now there are only 5 golfers total under par at the U.S. Open with winged foot. Justin Thomas, and 5 over par. That is absolutely horrible. Rick Hahn addressed the clinching of the playoffs and some big picture stuff for the White Sox as they enter in to a wide open contention window. Let's hear from the White Sox general manager next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.